It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There is nothing like that feeling of getting lost in a great book. So what is the top of your must-read list this spring? Be part of our conversation about reading lists, what you're reading and why. Questions about books, book suggestions, they're all welcome. 800-642-1234 to join in. Email ideas at WPR.org. Rebecca Meacham is here, professor of humanities and director of the Writing and Applied Arts Program at UW Green Bay. Rebecca, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back here and talk about the best things in the world, books.
So what we'd like to pick your brain. What are you currently reading?
Well, what I'm currently reading, I'm not very far in. So I'm going to try to do my best to build hype for this, but I'm very excited to get farther into it. And may I give the title and the author and go into it a little bit?
Yes, please do. Divulge.
All right. So I'm just at the beginning of a novel by Rebecca Mackay, who is a novelist who's come to acclaim from her most recent book, The Great Believers. The book that's out now is a novel, and it's called I Have Some Questions for You. And it is a thriller. It is academic, it's set at a school.
Yes.
And it's a whodunit. And she's just such an incredible stylist. She just pulls you in right from the very first sentence. I don't know if you want me to read any of this, but if you don't mind, can I just give you a taste of that first paragraph or so in here?
Sure. Give us a hint. Give us a little flavor. Yes.
So her very first words, she puts you in the context of today's world of obsession with true crime, but also the difficulties of being a young woman and being you know, sort of thought of as prey in a way. And so this is the very first paragraph or couple paragraphs of the novel. And it says, "You've heard of her, I say, a challenge and assurance. To the woman on the neighboring hotel bar stool who's made the mistake of striking up a conversation, to the dentist who runs out of questions about my kids and asks what I've been up to myself. Sometimes they know her right away. Sometimes they ask, wasn't that the one where the guy kept her in the basement? No, it was not. Wasn't it the one where she was stabbed in? No. The one where she got in a cab with? Different girl. The one where she went into the frat party, the one where he used a stick, the one where he used a hammer, the one where she picked him up from rehab and the one where he'd been watching her jog every day, the one where she made the mistake of telling him her period was late, the one with the uncle, the other one with the uncle, no. And then it continues into who it was. But it's such a startling first paragraph because it just orients you to this narrator's preoccupation with this girl from her class in the past at a school, what's happened to her, and then just sort of all of our, it kind of nails us as readers as well, because here we are in, getting ready to read this thriller along with the narrator as a podcaster and a filmmaker who's in sort of, dedicated to investigating these types of things. And we're kind of putting that, we're interested too, or in that audience too. We put these, we share these stories around. I should also say Mackay's she's a funny writer too. So there's some winks out at us. The character is, the narrator is very self-deprecating. It is also a bestseller, which is really cool. So Rebecca Mackay is very open about her life as a writer and going on tour. And she uses social media a lot. So if you're on Twitter, she posts there a lot. She has her own newsletter. I know I sound like her publicist, but I'm just such a fan. And so she's recently posted that she's just in disbelief that she has a bestseller on her hands. And it's clear why. I'm really excited to dig into this book.
Well, I wonder, the character is a podcaster and from, film scripts and stuff. Where does this book take the true crime genre? Because true crime has been so part and parcel to podcasting. I mean, how does this book influence true crime as a genre?
That's a great question. As I said, I'm just starting it, so I don't want to speak in a way that presumes that I can say a ton about where the plot goes, and also I don't want to spoil anything
sure.
for listeners. So I don't know. Do you want me to speak generally about that? Because it seems to me that it's time for us to, I mean, we've been hearing some critiques of the true crime genre and podcasting for a while. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan myself, and I'm fine with being called out on that. One of my own children, you know, I was describing to her how I was really interested in this specific true crime podcast. And she's now of an age where she said, you know, I don't think I feel great about listening to stories of true crime because it's not a story. It really happened to someone. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like being pushed back against by one's own teenager to really kind of, you know, put things into perspective. So I assume that this will be commenting on why we go to these sources of entertainment. And I'm just as guilty as everyone else. I try to curate. I try to say, well, no, I'm listening to this kind of thing rather than that. But in the end, you know, I'm still just listening like everyone else. And I think it's worth critiquing.
I'm going to reintroduce you here for a moment as we talk about reading and literature. UW Green Bay humanities professor and author Rebecca Meacham with us. You can join in with what's on your reading list and suggestions you have, questions you have about some great books you've read. 800-642-1234. Let's turn now to Modern Jungles, which really hits home to the Green Bay area. And you really want to shine a light here on Modern Jungles, among refugees' childhood story of survival. Tell us about Paul Lohr and what this memoir means.
It's terrific. And I will also say it is student tested. We're working on a project that are college student even, so, you know, just real discerning readers. And they loved it. And so I'm working on a project in a publishing class, and this was one of the closest types of books that gets to what we're working on. And it's terrific. So Paul Lohr is the author. It's his first book, and he says, in the interest of full disclosure, he is a chair, an endowed chair of education at my institution, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. But I really hadn't spoken to him much before I picked this book up. Like, this was a true sort of choice and really a true pick, an authentic choice. And so it's his memoir, and it really brings clarity and light to the harrowing plight of Hmong refugees in Green Bay and in this area. I grew up in Ohio in an area where I was exposed very little to any kind of Hmong community. I didn't know very much, and so I came into this book as just a person who needed to learn a lot. And what's so great is that Paul Lohr is, like, instructive, but at the same time, he's a very young child when he and his family need to leave Laos. They go to a refugee camp, then they are brought to the United States to California, I think, and then they end up in Green Bay. And he is an orphan. His father was assassinated before they even left, and then his mother and his sister meet tragic ends as they're crossing a river to get into Thailand. But he has a lot of other family. And so this is a really, like, difficult story, but what keeps it moving and sort of buoyant is that Paul Lohr is very grateful and mentions connections and collaborations all the time and all of the support that helped him get through. And he's very much talking about the friends that he makes in Green Bay. And also, I mean, it was rough. Like, he got into fights. He had to, you know, he talks about experiencing racism, but also he like makes these connections where with other Hmong children, other white kids. He becomes a soccer player. He starts coaching soccer. Like, he's really it's a really hopeful discussion of all of this. But also, I have to say, you know, it really, my students and I were really, like, struck by some of the more stark elements of this. For example, in one of the more that helped illuminate sort of how kind of good we have it, I guess, if we've not gone through these experiences, especially the plight of poverty. And so in one section, he, you know, Paul is a child and he's in elementary school and it's lunchtime. And he and his family, who are now in Green Bay, are so poor. They don't they don't have lunches to pack. So at lunchtime, he and his friends who also don't have lunches just go to the neighborhood and look for gardens and plum trees and, you know, just things to eat. And wow. And it just, it never once occurred to me that that could be. And then, and you know, later there's hot lunches, there are all these, you know, there are ways that
programs,
that situation, yes, is overcome. Yeah. But it was so stark. I was just like, wow, like that's so surprising. But anyway, it's a surprisingly optimistic book and very hopeful. And I do want to say one last thing. It's also accessible, I think, for like later elementary school children all the way up. Like it's the way it's written is also of him as a young person, very young, trying to piece together who he is because he's an orphan and he's not sure, like very, you know, he's a really little kid when this all starts. He's also discovering himself.
It makes me also wonder what impact the book has on opening up perceptions about Wisconsin and preparing future teachers about the people who make Wisconsin home. I mean, I think it could have quite a bit of a transformation.
Absolutely. And he's an education professor, so it's not surprising that in the story he thrives in classrooms. And also it brings out, he acknowledges, you know, I'm a competitive person and I was competitive as a child, but there are certain teachers that he even names as part of his journey of helping him integrate, helping him make connections, kind of lighting a fire of wanting to be the best at something, especially academically. And so I think in lots of ways, this is a celebration of teaching, but also is a tool of learning and letting all kinds of people into this type of life that I think honestly has probably been in shadowed for lots of different reasons. Mm. And so, yeah, it's really illuminating. It's a great book. It's a sort of faster read. I pay attention to how writers put, you know, words on pages, which sounds really like simplistic, but what I mean is there white space? Like, where does your eye fall and so forth?
Sure. And you're into the nuts and bolts. Yes.
I can't help it. I'm a real process geek and I'm a real geek about the pages, but what's good, I think what makes it open to all levels of reading is he has lots of short passages. So there's like a page and then there'll be a picture or there'll be, you know, he's moving around a lot. So I think that also makes it approachable in a classroom setting as well, I would imagine.
UW-Green Bay Humanities Professor Rebecca Meacham, Director of the University's Writing and Applied Arts Program. Call in with your questions anytime. Share your tips for good reads at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We get reading suggestions for the new season. Call in with your reading suggestions. We talk about with UW-Green Bay Humanities Professor Rebecca Meacham here. Your questions about books and publishing, welcome along the way at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next book here, Sleepwalk. You wanted to call that to our attention by Dan Shaun, released last year. What should we know about Sleepwalk?
Okay, and this is, I do have to make a disclaimer. When I submitted this list to you all, I realized that I have kind of a grim taste in literature. So I'm gonna just warn everybody that this one's a grim one. I was rereading it like, oh my goodness sakes, what am I telling people to do? But it's such a, here's what I love about this book. So Dan Shaun, and I want to spell that name because it's not spelled like it sounds. It's Chaon. He is one of my favorite writers, and he's a current writer. And he writes short stories and novels, in which you usually have like a first person, somebody that's speaking themselves, that's kind of like a loser and knows he's a loser, and he's very deadpan, and it's, so there's a lot of sort of humor that's just right under the surface, but then that character tends to go through all sorts of strange and shifting relationships with reality and memory. So the previous book to this that I really loved was called Ill Will. And there's some really, that is a book that really is a very unsettling book about sort of what's happening with disappearances of young men and the main character's relationship to his family. Okay, so in Sleepwalk, this is really kind of the grimmest extreme of Dan Shaun's work that I've read so far. But it's funny, it's strange, and it's mysterious. And it's really a story of extremity in a lot of ways. So it's set in the near future. And this is a time when, like, there's extreme weather. Typhoons are in Seattle. It causes snow in Utah in October. And this narrator is a first-person narrator. And he's like his job is kind of strange. Like, this is, again, the near future. It's this apocalyptic climate. You know, all kinds of terrible stuff has happened. But he's like a driver or a delivery man, and he works for this shadowy corporate network. He lives on the road. He's got this RV at the beginning, and he has this pit bull dog that's his companion.
Really living off the grid.
Completely. But he's also networked because he has this job. He always gets these sort of assignments to bring, like, you don't know why and he doesn't know why, but he'll just have someone in his car or something in his RV that he's taking to somebody else. So he doesn't understand what he's part of. So what ends up happening is, and he grew up on the road and he takes lots of drugs. Like, this dude's not like an admirable person, but he knows that. He's very aware of it. And into this situation comes a phone call. And so it's, you know, he has all these burner phones. He has lots of identities. And on the other end of the phone is a young woman saying, basically, I'm your daughter. And he can't figure out how this works because first of all, he has lots of aliases in burner phones. No one's supposed to be able to get a hold of him except his bosses. And also he's never been in a relationship, right? So he knows he made a donation at a sperm bank, and so he's thinking, well, maybe this is it. So the whole book is him trying to figure out. Again, it's one of these journeys through identity. He even says, "I hate memory," and there's this whole long passage of why he hates remembering things, which I think is such a cool thing to do as a writer, to put a character saying that, and then he starts remembering things. But the young woman keeps calling him. He keeps trying to learn more about her. He can't tell if she's part of a group. And then it just keeps going that way.
It makes me wonder, though, because it brings up that question of write about what you know. And, you know, I don't think that Dan Shaun is really, you know, conducting himself in the underworld of criminal groups or anything. How do you wrestle with that and making characters feel relatable and yet having their own agency?
You know, that's a great question. And I certainly hope Dan Shaun's not up to that. I've met him before. He's a delightful person. He has a sort of dark sense of humor, as you'd imagine, but he seems pretty much to be doing the writing thing exclusively. So I think, you know, that's the thing that I really love about his books and his writing is he has empathy for a tremendous range of characters, and they're not heroic at all. And so you know, I think that probably interviews I've read with him or discussions I've had with him, he seems sort of self-deprecating and kind of, I don't want to say Midwestern and claim that as something special, but sort of like ready to be equal with you or put himself in the same place as you. And he does this in interviews. I'm not just saying this because, like, I know him because I don't know him that well, but he does talk about that. And I think that power of empathy and that power of being able to put yourself in someone else's place, it's the key to reading. It's the key to writing. Lots of writers say, you know, fiction is empathy, and you have to be able to inhabit a space that's uncomfortable. And the thing that I love about In Order to Get Into Your Characters, and the thing I love about Dan Shaun's books is he'll take things to the, like, next extreme, just a little bit of an extreme. He has this really notable story in his incredible short story collection, if there are fans of short stories, called, in the collection's called Among the Missing. And there is this scene in the story where his narrator has always been sort of linked to his best friend. He's an adult narrator. He's a grown man with children, but his best friend, Ricky, disappeared when they were teenagers. And he's always sort of, you know, oh, Ricky would have wanted this. And so this narrator kind of has become this surrogate for mm-hmm. what his missing friend would have wanted. And the best thing is that Dan Shaun's character is really annoyed by this. Like, we're so used to creating, you know, all of this sort of distance and I don't know what it is, for our own comfort, like a grieving parent is a sacred thing. And I'm not saying mm-hmm. it isn't. What I appreciate about Dan Shaun is his character's like, I'm sick of these people comparing me to their son. He just has the character has an outburst at dinner. And so that's what I, at a dinner with these, with these people. And what I love about it is how he's kind of like taking people's impulses with memory or with things that we tend to romanticize mm-hmm. or valorize and just sort of dismantles them little by little.
Rebecca, I just want to pause right there. Rebecca Meacham leads the Writing and Applied Arts program at UW Green Bay. Talking books, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're in conversation with UW Green Bay Professor of Humanities, Rebecca Meacham, sharing her short list of recommended books and your favorites along the way as well. Join in by calling 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Dee in Bayfield. Hi, Dee. What would you recommend?
Well, good morning, ladies, and thank you for taking my call. I'm so excited to be able to greet my former colleague, Dr. Rebecca Meacham. The book that I'd like to include to recommend to readers, to the audience, and to Rebecca is Night of the Living Res by Morgan Talty. And I must confess that I started reading the book, and I loved it so much. I was so eager to read the rest of it and recommend it to my friends, but I had to put it down because I needed to read another book for my work. But Morgan Talty has this talent of just in the midst of humor and just this beautiful way of rendering a story about families on a Native American reservation and just the brutal sadness that can be felt by historical trauma, by families that have contended with that over the years. I just think that he's able to resurrect a feeling of just sheer beauty and wonder that I'm in awe of, and I'm really, as a writer myself, I'm pretty jealous of. So I wanted to make sure that Night of the Living Res gets on your list, Rebecca, by Morgan Talty.
Rebecca, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to say, hi, Dee. It's great to hear your voice again. We used to work together quite a while ago, and it's nice to hear your voice. Absolutely. I've heard nothing but good things about this, the book that she's recommending, Night of the Living Res, and it's on my to-read list. So that's so glad to have this recommendation. That's awesome.
Dee, is this a short story collection?
Yes, it is. And oftentimes Native authors are often described as short story writers, sort of masquerading as novelists. Because oftentimes short stories are dedicated to a particular character, but it's sort of molded together as a story of a family or a story of a reservation. And that, I think, is a talent of our writers, our Native writers, yeah.
Dee, thank you so much for calling in. Rebecca, any follow-up there? Because you do also have two collections of short stories.
Oh, yes, I do. But mine are frankly, nowhere near as good as what she's I mean, that's a terrible way of selling your own books, but she's speaking of writers that I so admire. When she was talking of First Nations writers, I was thinking actually of Erdrich, and because she's just, you know, the best. And also, when I teach a novel writing workshop to undergraduates, and they have to write a 50,000-word novel draft, it's generative, in about 12 weeks. And then we do novel revision class after that. Here's the mess you made. Now what do you do with it? And one of the books I love to sort of teach in there is Love Medicine by Louise Erdrich, because it looks like a story collection, but it's referred to as a novel because she's talked about this, that actually it started off with, the idea started off with Love Medicine and Tracks kind of as one big project, mm-hmm. but to get it published, you know, it had to be smaller, but that's because all of these characters that are amazing and funny and it's very tragic circumstances, but also so much humor in her writing, where they're enmeshed and they're moving through each other's lives over generations. So yeah, that was the first thing I thought of is, you know, my own stories are much more delineated and separate from one another, but the interrelationship of these stories really makes it a pleasure to read.
Well, on the collection of stories theme here, I suppose, World of Wonders is a book you want to bring up. World of Wonders in Praise of Fireflies, Whale Sharks, and Other Astonishments. And this book, this collection, I think, came out in the pandemic, 2020, author Amy Nezukama Tatil. What can you tell us?
Yes. So I was trying to justify why I should go like sort of this far back in time. But then I realized, you know, I mean, what, 2-3 years? But during the pandemic, authors, you know, trying to promote a book was both easy and difficult because the conventional ways that you would do this, you know, people go to stores and they see things were sort of difficult during lockdown. Mm. So this book, and I'm so glad I have this on the list because I feel like I led with such like dark stuff. This book is a delight. And there are many reasons why it's a delight. One is that the author is a poet and has a poet sensibility of language. The writing itself is just beautiful and musical. But two, what she's doing is she's taking different animals and plants and natural phenomenon, and then she'll have each little chapter or piece of it sort of, you know, talking a bit about what this thing is. So some of the chapters are titled Catalpa Tree, Peacock, Touch Me Not, Narwhal, you know, and then she'll talk a little bit, some of the facts about that particular living creature are brought in to a story that's really about her growing up and often being marginalized and then how that, you know, she's an Asian American. And so how does that factor into her family moved around a lot? So it goes from her childhood all the way, and her mother worked. And so there's stuff about that. It goes from her childhood all the way through high school, through her marriage, which, you know, to this wonderful man. They bonded. She has a test. One of the chapters is called Corpse Flower. Hmm. And, you know, that terrible, stinky giant flower that draws people in droves to go see it. And so she said that when she was dating in this particular section, dating people, that would be her test of like her date, you know. And when she knew she met the man for her, when he not only was like, okay, sure, that sounds interesting, but also said, when do we take a road trip to go see the corpse flower? And she realized, you know, he was there to do anything that she wanted and was just as interested in the adventure. It's a delightful book. It also has, even in the Kindle version or the electronic version, you can see these drawings of the natural things she's talking about. It's just a delight. And it's not 100% like, you know, joy, like it's joyful, but it's not like everything is smooth sailing in her life. And so she also talks about, there's this great chapter called, or great piece called Vampire Squid, where she's talking about the difficulty that she had in high school fitting in, at least initially when her family had moved again and she was like a sophomore or something, and how she really felt like a cephalopod and would, you know, be on her own and identified with this vampire squid. Towards the end of that piece, though, what she says is, you know, everything kind of worked out. I joined the tennis team, and, you know, I didn't stay that way. I didn't stay that kid who ate lunch in a bathroom stall because I didn't want to see anyone see me being lonely. Things kind of worked out. But now, because I had that experience, I relate so well to those kids, those students in my classes as a professor. I can see the loneliness and I make sure I reach out to them or I ask how they're doing. And it's just beautiful like that. It's short, it's a compact read, and it's delightful. It's the book I like to give to people because it's such a delight.
Talking about reading and literature, favorite picks, UW-Green Bay Humanities Professor Rebecca Meacham, our guide, author as well of two fiction short story collections. You can join in with your questions about books, the titles you wish to bring up, 800-642-1234. Chong is here from Green Bay. Hi, Chong.
Yes, I'm from Green Bay, yeah.
Yes, what would you like to ask?
I'm searching for a proofreader. I wonder if you let me go on the air and see if I have any luck to get a proofreader. The past 30 years, I've been writing. I have about 3 books now that I like them to be published, but my English is not that good. I need a proofreader, and I wonder if anybody is interested in helping me.
Chong, thank you. I want to get Rebecca's response here about, you know, Chong has 3 books in the works, really needs a proofreader. What would you suggest?
Oh, well, there are lots of services out there that are available that offer proofreading. You know, there's lots and lots of folks that are freelance proofreaders. But also, if Chong is looking for a publisher, that's a whole other, that's like another show worth of material in terms of ways to get your books in the hands of readers and the kinds of editing that you might need to do ahead of time. I think taking advantage of some of the resources through libraries, some of the resources online where you're like looking for proofreaders, looking for editing and publishing opportunities. I would say be wary of to anyone wanting to publish a book, be wary of people who want to charge you a lot of money to do that, unless you've worked out some type of agreement where you know that you're self-publishing and that you are going to pay for those costs of publishing a book. But be very mindful because there are lots of places out there that maybe aren't going to give you the best deal for what you might pay. So that's a very like general way here of answering that question. And if Chong has questions afterwards, maybe I can speak offline or something.
Yes, Chong, thank you so much for calling in. As we explore book recommendations, the world of literature, UW-Green Bay Humanities Professor Rebecca Meacham along the way here. Join in with your questions, your comments. Call in at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Be part of our conversation with Rebecca Meacham, UW-Green Bay Professor, Director of the University's Writing and Applied Arts Program, as we trade book ideas, experiences we've had with books. I want to give a shout out to the book my sixth grader is reading to me, and that is The War That Saved My Life. Just truly remarkable novel by Kimberly Brubaker Bradley. Really appreciate it. Call in with your suggestions, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Wayne in Prairie du Sac. Hi, Wayne.
Yeah, good morning. I was fascinated to hear your guest's view on Steve Shown and Sleepwalk. It's a book that I just happened to pick up in a free library out when I was out for a walk. Had not heard of him as an author. And I'm still in the middle of it, so I don't want any spoilers, but I was amazed by his ability to write a great story. I mean, typically, as both an author and an editor myself, I tend to dissect authors, and it's hard for me to get into the plot. I've been having difficulty actually separating his craft because I'm too much into the story.
That's such a good problem to have, Wayne. Rebecca, go ahead.
Oh, you know, I absolutely, Wayne, feel exactly the same way because, you know, if you're professionally attached to reading and writing or you teach it or you work however with it, you're always sort of looking at how it's made and you're looking at, you know, I don't know. I always use terrible analogies that I don't know much about. But like if you were a car person, you would look at engines and look at how they're put together. And so I'm always curious about that craft element. And absolutely with this book and with the Mackay book, I forget to do that. And that to me is, you know, if you're really taught to pay attention and that's part of your vocation, and then you don't because you're just so immersed in the reading or the language, I think that's true skill and really the best compliment that I feel like I can give is that you made me forget that I maybe had to do some work here and that I just fell into the pleasure of the reading. So that's how Dan Shaun absolutely is for me too.
Wayne, thanks so much. No spoilers here, and enjoy the ride of that book. I want to turn to audiobooks, Rebecca. You're a fan. You're listening to the memoir called I'm Glad My Mom Died, and that's former childhood actress Jeanette McCurdy sharing her childhood story, includes the death of her mother, and here's the moment she stands beside her mother's hospital bed.
I'm standing around Mom's tiny, comatose body with my three older brothers, Marcus, the together one, Dustin, the smart one, and Scott, the sensitive one. I wipe the corners of her crusted shut eyes with a rag and then it begins.
What is happening for you in this book? What comes up for you in listening to the audio version?
First of all, another disclaimer. This is a tough book. I mean, you can tell by the title, right? I'm Glad My Mom Died, or whatever, you know, I mean, that's already putting you somewhere. But it's read by the author, and because she's an actress, and she, you know, it's about her life as a child actress for shows. I never really watched because I was too old. You know, it wasn't really my childhood. But like iCarly and I don't know other ones. Mm-hmm. Forgive me, people who know these shows. It shows the power of the story because it's so much about her mother dominated her life to incredible extremes to the point that at one point, you know, she's Jeanette, the child, is really sick of a particular flavor of ice cream, and she and her mom are getting ice cream after some type of acting experience that she's just shot something, and you know, she says, I don't really like that ice cream anymore, and her mom is so heartbroken because they shared that as their favorite flavor that Jeanette ends up sort of in this scene saying, okay, no, I really like it. And so while I hope very few of us have an experience like Jeanette McCurdy's, it would be pretty hard to. She's a child star. You know, she's in this terrible space. It's really, there are some things that just stood out, not about, like, for me, my childhood was wonderful. I love my parents. They were perfectly, you know, restrained. But just how the lengths we go to maybe to please people in our lives and how we deal with the pain of some of these connections. It's also just fascinating to learn. I can't help but I love looking up, you know, how movies are made, how actors do things. And so if you're interested in sort of the behind the scenes of how actors move through, especially in the 90s, like you're on a show or the early 2000s, or you're on a show and then you have to go on tour as a musician and just all of these different sort of demands on young stars of certain era. And the ways that she navigates that. I will also say there's a lot about her eating disorder in here. So if you have issues with, you know, any of these things, this is probably not the book for you. But I really do love the audio version of it because she's funny. And I don't think you would necessarily glean that from a written version of this. I think you really need to hear the way she delivers her own story in her voice to really pick up on how she's she's you know, she's pointing to some really difficult stuff, but she also has this sort of humor, this bitter humor that really comes out in the audio.
I want to shift gears here entirely, looking at book banning. And you teach the book Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, Sherman Alexie, published in 2009. And you have said it's typically banned in K-12 schools. What can you tell us about this book?
Well, I will be, in interest of full disclosure, I've taught it in college a little bit, a couple times. I don't teach it now just due to a number of circumstances, but I will say that, you know, it is a book about, again, a teenager searching for identity. The form of it is as a sort of, it's illustrated, and so it's almost like a comic memoir, comic meaning like graphic, looking like a comic book, but also not. So it's got illustrations by Ellen Forney, you know, here and there in there, and they actually do this excellent work in telling the story too. So it's really accessible. It's about this boy growing up on a reservation, and he's trying to deal with the difficulties of his family and relationships there, as well as going to another kind of school and author, and, you know, fitting in there, and just, you know, it's really great. But in terms of the banning, my understanding is, you know, there are some passages where, I mean, I'm just going to say, it's a teenage boy discovering his body, and he's very funny, and he's very, like, happy about that. And so, you know, there are definitely probably parents out there who are like, I don't, you know, this seems a little, like, dirty or strange. But the way that it's handled in the book is, like, very naturally and sort of exuberantly, like, I'm a teenage boy, and this is great. Now, the book is about way more than that. But this very small piece of it, I think, tends to land it on a let's you know, no one should read this. And I, you know, that's problematic because a lot of people have been affected by and impacted by a story featuring this kind of character. The author himself, Sherman Alexie, talks about, you know, how seeing the book A Snowy Day, I think, Jack, oh, I'm blanking out on his name. Jack something. Thank you.
Yes,
it's that illustrated book of that little brown-skinned boy playing in the snow. It's very iconic. There are stamps made of it now, I think. And what a revelation that was to see a brown boy in a book in his library, in his school library, and just being amazed by that. And I think that, you know, when you deny that kind of book to anyone, you know, and you ban it, not just say, oh, parents, you can make your own decision, but nobody should read that. That's what a ban is. Then you're depriving all sorts of future writers and thinkers and people from realizing they can tell a story too, that their stories are important, that they have agency, and that they are out there in the world. And there are people like them.
We only have like 15 seconds left. Just hot take, ChatGPT, AI tools and writing. What is your take?
It's not going away. Embrace it like, as my colleague Jenny Young says, embrace it like a calculator. When it came along to math, find a way to use it and find a way for students to learn to use it and then master and be better than it. It's not going anywhere. So, yes, we want real, true, clear, original stories. I'm not saying I want ChatGPT to win, but I think viewing it as the enemy is the wrong way to go.
Rebecca, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. This has been a pleasure.
Rebecca Meacham is a UW Green Bay Professor of Humanities and Director of its Writing and Applied Arts Program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.